السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ. ماشاء اللہ, یو آلریڈی کمپلیٹڈ ون نائٹ آف اعتکاف. اٹ ہیز بین دا پریکٹس آف اور اکابر, اور ایلڈرز, دیٹ ان اعتکاف دے ٹو آلویز فائنڈ اباؤٹ این آور سو for some nasihats to those that are sitting in Aitikaf. As a Sheikh Zakariya Sahib Rahmatullah Ali also, when he was in staying, those who were here, or those who know those days, that from 11 to 12, they used to have, generally for the people in, or specifically for those in Aitikaf, but others afterwards, used to benefit also from the nasihats that were given. The reason for that is that the person has made a sacrifice. He has left the outside environment, he has left his home, he has left his surroundings, left his business, left his travels, left his repping, left his practice. So many different occupations. The person leaves all that and he comes and puts himself in Aitikaf. So it is necessary that the person must make that Aitikaf properly so that he gets all the benefits of that Aitikaf. Otherwise, a person has spent 10 days, he has made so much of sacrifice of other things, and at the end of the 10 days, if he doesn't get the real benefit and the true benefit, then it is what we term as exercising futility. However, the people who are in Aitikaf, there is no such thing as exercising futility, because some part of the day or night still they will get for ibadat, zikr, tilawat, which they may not have had the opportunity of doing outside. So last night I was discussing that what is Aitikaf, and I gave you some basic masail, and we will inshallah continue. So I explained to you that as far as Aitikaf is concerned, it's an aashiqana ibadat. That how a lover is in search of his beloved. So like that, the person that is sitting in Aitikaf, his beloved is Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. And he has come to the door of Allah ta'ala, he has placed himself there and said, I won't move from here, O Allah, until you forgive my sins, until you change my condition, until you bring about, O Allah, until you bless me with a total reformation and change in my life. That is why I have come here. I have come with my sins, and O Allah, I want you to forgive my sins. So this person is an ashik of Allah Ta'ala. Something that he cannot tolerate is the displeasure of Allah Ta'ala. He can tolerate everything else, but something that he cannot tolerate is the displeasure of Allah Ta'ala, because Allah Ta'ala is his beloved. And Allah Ta'ala is the one who has blessed him with whatever faculties he has, whatever he possesses, it is all Allah Ta'ala's gift. So to make Allah Ta'ala displeased is not a sensible thing to do, because Allah Ta'ala has both qudrat and power to give also and to snatch away also. Allah Ta'ala is the one who gives, and he also has the power to snatch away. Therefore, there are two rights of Allah Ta'ala. One is the right of his muhabbat, and the other is the right of his azmat. Allah Ta'ala has two rights. One is the right of his muhabbat, and the other is the right of his azmat, his greatness. The right of his muhabbat is that the person engages in salat, he makes tahajjud, ishraq, chasht, although these namazes are not farz. But the person makes it because of his muhabbat for Allah Ta'ala. He doesn't limit himself that my duty, what is my duty? Like a person who is employed in a business, and the employee says that, write it down, give me exactly what time to what time I must work, and what are my duties. Now this person, he just goes by that. If he is told from 8 to 5, then he comes exactly at 8 o'clock. And 5 o'clock he leaves. And he doesn't do one thing more than what he has been told to do. So this person will get his salary because he did this job, whatever he had to do, he did this job, he'll get his salary and he'll go away. But it won't increase his muhabbat in the heart of the employer. There won't be an increase in the muhabbat. It shows that this person is a person who just fulfills duties. And in the first place, most of those who go by the timetable, they don't even do that, because they will always come little late and go away little early. A few minutes before five, they already got their coats on to go. So that person, he will get his salary. And if he does his job well, then he may get some congratulation, you did a good job, if he does it well. But there's another person who comes away before time, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour before time. During his lunch break also, if he's got a 1 hour lunch break, he says, no, I will just take half an hour, and the other half an hour I want to make some input into this business, and I want to contribute whatever I can towards making this business progress. And then after five also, he's still doing some work or the other in some department, so that he may increase the profits for his manager, for his boss, for his employer. And then when the employer asks him that, what do you want for all this overtime that you worked, he said, no, nothing. In my love for you, I did all this overtime. Now if somebody has to say like that today, of course that you'll find one in a million these days. But if you have to find someone like that, then won't the muhabbat increase in that employer's heart? Then that employer will say that, no, if other people, I'm giving them an X amount of money per hour as overtime, then for you there's no limit, don't worry, anything you need you ask me, I will give you. That's what will happen. The person will say that, no, this man, he's making a sacrifice for me, for my pleasure, and when I ask him, what do you want in return to, he says, nothing, I just want you to be happy. If only we understand this, that what kind of love will be generated in the heart of that employer. So if worldly activities, worldly businesses and worldly employers, if there's a kind of a muhabbat that comes in their heart for such kind of employees who do more than what they have been asked to do for the pleasure of that employer, then Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, who is the creator of the whole universe, and in whose hands the entire universe lies, his treasures are unlimited. Now if the person says that namaz is farz five times a day, but oh Allah, that is what is farz on me, but I want to make some nafil namaz too, I want to make ishraq, I want to make chasht, I want to make tahajjud, and when Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala asks, oh my servant, what are you seeking by means of all these things? What do you want? Then the person says, Allahumma inni as'aluka ridaaka wal jannah. Oh Allah, I want your pleasure. First he says, I want your pleasure. And because Allah ta'ala himself has said, now you must ask for jannat, so therefore he's asking for jannat. But in reality he's saying, oh Allah, I want your pleasure. I want your happiness. I want your muhabbat. All these things I didn't do for anything else. I didn't do it so that barakat will increase in my business. I didn't do it so that I will get plentiful of material things as reward. You can ask for all that. In dua, the person must ask for everything. But what I'm getting across to you is this, keeping in mind the analogy that I gave of that employer and employee, that there was a duty on the person, and that duty was limited. But this person went beyond duty and he engaged himself in service for the pleasure of the employer. So that muhabbat built up. Like that here, this person, the right of the muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala is that he does not limit himself to faraiz. We will definitely tell people that in the beginning you make sure that you make your faraiz properly, and whatever is wajib and sunnat muakkada, we won't take them onto too much of nafil ibadat and all that in the beginning, as long as they get that right. So we will say you got a pass mark, they have a pass mark in the examination, then it's examination time now. So one is pass mark, that the person passed. He says he got the percentage of that is required for passing. But does a student remain happy with just a pass mark? If all the students get just a 40% pass mark, say if it's 40%, that's a pass mark. And in that school, all passed, but they all passed with just 40%. Will the principal and will all the staff and others be very happy with that group of matriculants, that they all just passed, nothing, no exemptions, nothing. They just made it. He'll say they won't be happy. They all want, and even the students themselves, why do they work so hard, some of them? Because they don't want to just get a pass mark. They want to go further. They want to go to university. They want to take up some other profession. So therefore they want to put in that extra effort so that they get distinctions. So when it comes to dunyavi line, then there we are all looking for distinctions, looking for that extra, and we put in that extra effort, we go that extra mile. So when it comes to ibadat also, there is what we may term as a pass mark, that the person made his farz namaz, and that too that farz namaz also, condition that he made it properly. The namaz too also must be made properly, knowing fully well the adab, the etiquette, the farais, the wajibat, the sunnats, the mustahab. How many of us our namazes are like that? So when the namaz is made like that, then we'll say the person got a pass mark, that he fulfilled some duty. But now he's going that extra mile. And for what? For no other purpose but just Allah Ta'ala's pleasure. My Allah will get happy. Why I'm reading namaz? For Allah Ta'ala's pleasure. Then comes to zakat. Then again in zakat, we will say that there is a certain amount that has to be given if you are sahib nisab. Now 21 ounces of silver or 3 ounces of gold or its equivalent in cash or merchandise for trade is the basic rule. After that there are details which you find in the books of jurisprudence. Then you give 2.5%. Now we will say that this 2.5% of giving is the bare minimum that the person has given, that as a farz duty. It was an obligation, a farz duty upon him when he gave that. But we won't say that this person has attained distinction, because he is just looking for the bare minimum, what is to be given. So this doesn't indicate love. This is a fulfillment of a duty. We will say that he is a person who fulfills his obligation and duty. And again, he will be the person who will say just got his pass mark. But the other person says that no, Allah Ta'ala, out of his kindness and out of his mercy, he gave us 2.5%, ordered us to give 2.5%. Depending, of course, on what he's giving zakat, because it's not 2.5% all the time. People who are in farming, there's different zakat depending on what kind of farm. Those who are doing cattle farming, those and other things, they're different zakats. But this person is giving the basic, the bare minimum. So now that is what we will term as a fulfillment of a duty. The person is fulfilling his duty. But the ashik of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, he goes beyond the duty. Therefore, I think it was Hazrat Junaid Baghdadi or someone that he was asked that how much of zakat has to be given. On wealth, how much of zakat must be given? So he said that you are asking for yourself or you are asking for the ummah, because this person was his murid. He was claiming to have ishq for him. So he said, you are asking for the ummah, what is the masla, or for you, who is claiming to be an ashik of Allah Ta'ala. So he said, no, I'm asking for myself. He said, yes, the masla for the ummah is that 2.5% or whatever nisab you have, then so much zakat. He said, but for the ashik of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, there is no question of how much zakat. Whatever he has belongs to Allah Ta'ala. So wherever the need is, he must keep spending. besides the 2.5%, he must consider whatever he has got as Allah Ta'ala's, and he must keep giving. So now this person who is an ashik of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, so he will go beyond that zakat. Then he spends for masjids, madrasas, poor, needy, orphans, widows, etc. So that is the sign of muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala. So like this, across the board, there is one right of Allah Ta'ala which we term as the right of his muhabbat. And the other is the right of his azmat. So in muhabbat, the person makes namaz, roza, zakat, hajj, umrahs, charities and all that in his muhabbat. But when it comes to azmat of Allah Ta'ala, then it demands that the person restrains himself from haram. Whatever Allah Ta'ala has declared as haram, then keeping in mind this greatness of Allah Ta'ala, the power of Allah Ta'ala, this azmat of Allah Ta'ala, when it, this exalted status and might and power of Allah Ta'ala, when he keeps that in his heart, that it is just not befitting of me to be sinning, because that Allah has got the power to snatch away all the gifts that he has blessed me with. Can anybody say that? No, he can't do it. No matter who the person may be. But Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala can just snatch it away. Within seconds, everything is gone. Not only material, but even physical. Of course, for some people it will be a test of their iman, a test of their love for Allah Ta'ala, a test of their sabr and patience. But the fact is that Allah Ta'ala has that power to take it away. And when the person goes on sinning and he becomes obstinate and he is persistent in sins, then Allah Ta'ala gives him a long rope, gives him a chance, make tawbah, come back, make tawbah, come back. But he doesn't, then suddenly the calamity comes. I have mentioned many times that ayat of the Quran Sharif, فَلَمَّا نَسُوا مَا ذُكِّرُوا بِهِ فَتَحْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ أَبْوَابَ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ حَتَّى إِذَا فَرِحُوا بِمَا أُوتُوا أَخَذْنَاهُمْ بَغْتَةً فَإِذَا هُمْ مُبْلِسُونَ. When they forgot to heed those warnings in it that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala had given, when they were indulging in sins and when they were disobeying, then Allah Ta'ala sent a little bit of calamity, a little bit of problem, some difficulty here and there, so that they may take a lesson and return to Allah Ta'ala. But when they fail to heed those advices, when they fail to heed those warnings, then instead of punishing them with more azab, Allah Ta'ala opened the doors of everything. All the ni'mats now started flooding in. The person started getting richer by the day. His health started improving. And everything seemed to be working out very good for him. Now this person gets very happy, that if my Allah wasn't happy, then why did he give me all these things? But this is now the danger line, that now when he begins to enjoy those things. Like some years ago, one person came and he said, of course, na'uzu billah, Allah Ta'ala must save us from saying such things, but this person came and he says, Mawlana, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, just see how Allah Ta'ala made my way out. When the bank manager, I just went to him and he said, you can take any amount of facility you want. He said, you can take any amount of facility you want, don't worry. And he came to my rescue and he gave me so many thousands straight away. And a person who had so much of other assets, now for him to say that Allah Ta'ala opened the door for him, na'uzu billah, to go to the bank and borrow on interest, then you must understand that this person is heading for disaster. And that is exactly what happened. Not even 6 months later, his whole empire collapsed. It's within 6 months' time. So that wasn't an opening. That was what this ayat refers to, that suddenly the person thinks that now suddenly everything is working out. But because it is in disobedience to Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, so this is a test, or it's an azab in a disguised form. Allah Ta'ala says, when they are in the midst of their enjoyment, after that in the midst of their enjoyment when they are, then Allah Ta'ala suddenly calls them to account, suddenly seizes them, and they are thrown into complete bewilderment after that. And around the world at present, this is what we are witnessing, that everything will be peaceful, everything is very calm and everything very relaxed, and everybody seems to be enjoying life, and suddenly just something will spark off, and there'll be riots, and there'll be burning, and there'll be looting, and there'll be raping, and finish. The peace and security and everything is gone. Why? Because we do not heed those advices that Allah Ta'ala had given. Because those very places where those riots and all take place, if you have to look back a few years, the same thing happened. And those were warning signs that change your life. Return to Allah Ta'ala, start going to the masjids, keep your beards, stay away from haram, obey Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So for those few days they did that, while the riots were on. But as soon as it subsided, then everything back to square one. Haven't we had in our country so many places, floods and gale force winds and other kinds of disasters and burning and looting? Even in the early days, in the 48, and after that too, so many times. But what happens is that our memories are very weak, or we make them very weak when it comes to remembering such incidents. Other things we remember very well. The person doesn't forget his birthday. People with weak memories, to one thing that they remember is their birthday. You ask that person, was it birthday, he remembers. That's why when you have to fill up these visa forms and all other application forms and passport details and all that, you have to most probably check there many times what's the passport number, that you forget. But when it comes to date of birth, then you just fill in very quickly. Everybody remembers that. So what we want to remember, we remember. So like that, these incidents which take place were reminders for us, but we forget that. So then Allah Ta'ala opens the doors, and when good things start flooding in, then we consider all these things as bounties of Allah Ta'ala, and we begin rejoicing whilst being still disobedient. Then Allah Ta'ala ceases suddenly. But if the person is enjoying those ni'mats whilst he is obedient, then Allah Ta'ala himself is happy. Allah Ta'ala himself gets happy when a person makes use of the ni'mats that he has blessed him with. But in obedience, then Allah Ta'ala himself becomes happy. It's like a father, or it's like parents who have children. There are three or four children, and they all are school going. Now three of them, they work very hard, they do their homework, they complete all housework. Whatever the parents say, they are also obedient. Now they had their meals, and after that when they finished, now they are playing. Young children, now they started playing, and they're laughing and they're jumping and one falling over the other. Now when the mother sees those three children, or the all children playing like that, or the father sees them, he gets very happy. He says, yes, mashallah, see how nice my children are smiling, playing, enjoying themselves, because they've completed all what had to be done. So not only that he becomes happy, but sometimes it gives them some money that go buy some sweets, chocolates, because they've done everything what had to be done. But of the four, the one is a lazy one, a very naughty one, a very disobedient one, does not even work hard in the school, doesn't do any homework, and repeated complaints from the principal and the teachers also, that this child of yours is a rascal and is giving us headaches. But this child also plays with those three. So the parent will be very happy with those three. But for this one, is they feel like giving him one tight slap, that when it comes to doing your homework and all that, you're not there ready for that. But when it comes to playing, then you are number one. Like one person never used to fast, but for iftar he used to be number one. So when somebody asked him, but you don't fast, you are fit and healthy, you don't fast, but when the dastarkhan is laid for iftar, then you are first one there. He says, well, if I didn't do one thing right, why must I not do the other thing right? Two wrongs don't make a right. So if I didn't fast, at least let me get the sawab of iftar. So now we'll do. So now he wants sawab of iftar without fasting. So if this child wants to play now without doing his work, So it's not going to be pleasing to the parents. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala also, when He gives out of His happiness, and then we make use of those ni'mats, then the person lives in a good home, he drives a good car, or he travels, or he visits, or he eats good food, then nothing. Allah ta'ala is pleased because he's doing it within the parameters of Sharia, and he has pleased Allah ta'ala. But when people make use of the ni'mats of Allah ta'ala with his displeasure, then it is exactly like the feeding of the cheese to the rats. That the person doesn't give that cheese to the rat because he's got great love for Mr. Rat. He wants to trap the rat. We were discussing i'tikaf. I don't know where we went, but in any case, let's get back to i'tikaf. So the one was the azmat of Allah Ta'ala, and one was the muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala. With regards to the muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala, a person does so many things for the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala, which is more than his duty. And when it comes to the azmat of Allah Ta'ala, then he must restrain himself from all the haram. Because that person is not a sensible person who goes to the Kruger National Park and then tells the people in the car that I'm a daring person. They say here you must remain in your cars with your windows locked. But what can the lion do to me? Haven't you heard of how, what a must I am at hunting? So he steps out of the car and he starts taking a walk. He said, because what beautiful scenery, why should I be depriving myself, lock up the car window? And he challenges the lions. Then we know that he will become the samosa of the lion. So Allah Ta'ala's azmat, the person who challenges it and says, oh Allah, I don't care, na'uzu billah. Although he doesn't say it in words, but when he's persistent in sins, then that is exactly what he's saying, that, oh Allah, I don't care. I've heard about your greatness and your might and your power, but it doesn't bother me very much. I can challenge your might, na'uzu billah. So then Allah Ta'ala will flatten him in such a way that he won't even know what hit him and when it hit him. Look at history. Look at our own South African history. If you just go a little back, there were names of people who used to walk with pride and arrogance. Where are they today? They have become dust in the graveyards. So the azmat of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala demands that the person restrains himself. So now this i'tikaf is actually an indication and a sign of the muhabbat of Allah ta'ala, that nobody made it farz on you to sit in i'tikaf. Nobody. Who forced you and brought you into i'tikaf? And it wasn't farz. So it is a sign of muhabbat. It is a sign of Allah Ta'ala's love, that you want to go that extra mile. Now to please Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, the person has sat in i'tikaf. He wants to show his muhabbat. So then, whilst he is in i'tikaf, which was supposed to be for the muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala, if the person starts engaging in ghibat, backbiting, or talking lies, or he uses his powers of imagination for fantasizing about haram. One is just the thought came and the person ignores it and it goes away. But those sins which were haram, totally haram outside the masjid, now when the person is in i'tikaf, which is supposed to be for the pleasure of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, so if he has to indulge in those sins, then you can imagine how much multiplied the sins are. And then again the month of Ramadan, and in the masjid. So then it was better that the person didn't sit in the masjid. Why I'm saying this is that in majority of the places that you go, where a few people are sitting in i'tikaf, half their time goes in gossiping about others, and all the ghibat which they used to make outside, now they make it inside the masjid, because they don't know what to do whole day, how they must spend their time. That is why I always say that in i'tikaf, always find a place away from your friend. Everybody likes to be next to the friend, next to the person that they can relate to and with whom they are comfortable to talk to. So that's very good outside you, with your friends. But I'm not saying it's haram, I'm not saying it's forbidden, because sometimes the friend can be a very good friend, one encouraging the other, let's read Quran Sharif, let's read Tasbih, or let's relax, but don't, let's not indulge in any kind of idle gossip and haram talk. So those kinds of friends are very good. But generally this is what happens, that friends get together and say, let's go and sit in i'tikaf. So in other words, all that which would have been spoken outside, let's go and sit inside the masjid and talk. So then it destroys that noor of that i'tikaf. And this is the major cause of 90% of those sitting in i'tikaf coming out at the end of Ramadan and being in the same lifestyle again, or back to square one. Because all that noor that was coming was vanishing. It was evaporating from the waters of the ocean. How much of water evaporates? It goes away. Or if you keep a jug full of water outside in the sun, after a couple hours or 1-2 days, you'll find nothing left there. It all evaporates. So like that, this noor also. And the noor comes out very quick. Noor doesn't remain very long. The moment sins start coming in, the noor goes. Noor of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala just doesn't stay together with sins, because sins are darkness, and darkness and noor don't go together. When noor will come, darkness will pack up its bags and go. As soon as noor comes, the darkness of sins will pack up their bags and leave. But if the person brings those bags back of sins, then the noor will go away. They don't get along. They're not friends at all. They can't live together. They will always be separate. Now in the first place, that noor is so little, we hardly have much. And then we engage in ghibat, we engage in some other sin, and then too again in the masjid, in the time of i'tikaf, in the month of Ramadan, in a Mubarak night of Ramadan, or a Mubarak day of Ramadan, Mubarak hours and seconds of Ramadan. So can you just imagine how suddenly everything is gone? So this is the purpose of having this type of programs for those who are in i'tikaf, that it gives you a little bit of understanding of what the whole purpose is of i'tikaf. That there are great rewards, there's no doubt. Yesterday I mentioned that 2 Hajj and 2 Umrahs. Now imagine how much of sawab Allah Ta'ala is giving to those in Sunnat i'tikaf. It's a pity now, due to health reasons and other commitments, you can't sit in Sunnat i'tikaf. But the thing is that those days when we used to sit in Saharanpur and other places, and in the early days of teaching also in our masjids, then we used to be just one out in the masjid. Those days used to be one person in a big masjid sitting, that's all. But the noor, or that enjoyment and that feeling that we used to get in those days, now you do not get when there's massive crowds in i'tikaf. Because those days the person is one out, or there's just one other person with him. Now what are they going to do? They're going to read Quran Sharif, they'll make some zikr, some tilawat, ibadat, or sleep. There's nobody else to talk to. So he'll be talking to Allah Ta'ala, making dua and begging of Allah Ta'ala as much as he can. And especially those masjids where it's a little scary also, in some outlying area. So that person will get up from tahajjud time and cry all night, because he'll be afraid of the jinnat coming, because he's alone. But inshallah, no jinnat will trouble him, don't worry. Just no... young brothers might get worried about jinnat. Here we must worry about the human jinnat. Our biggest problem are the human jinns who distract us. So this i'tikaf has got a shan of muhabbat of Allah Ta'ala, ishq of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. It creates that muhabbat, that love for Allah Ta'ala. And the person puts himself at the door of Allah Ta'ala and says, I'm not going to get up from you, Allah, until you have forgiven me. Now this i'tikaf is of 3 kinds. One is the i'tikaf that we term as wajib i'tikaf, where a person takes a vow, oh Allah, if I pass my examination, I will make 1 day i'tikaf. So for this person, he must keep one fast, and then he must sit down for i'tikaf. Now that is a wajib i'tikaf. or any other vow that he takes of that nature, where he says, I'm going to make one night or two nights or three nights of i'tikaf, or 3 days of i'tikaf. So then he must keep a fast and make that i'tikaf in any masjid. The other one is what we term as the sunnat i'tikaf. Now this sunnat of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam is muakkada according to the majority of the jurists, that wherever there is a masjid or in a town, in one of the masjids at least somebody must sit. And his sunnat al kifaya, that means if that one person sits, at least he'll absolve the others of sin. But that is the sunnat i'tikaf. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam sat with regularity, 10 days, 20 days, or 30 days. But 10 days was like regular. And as I mentioned, that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, what was the need for him to exert himself? Was he doing anything wrong, or na'uzubillah, was he like us sinning that he wanted maghfirat, that is why he went away into i'tikaf? We can say, well, we are very sinful ones, we are going to into i'tikaf so that we can get the maghfirat and the blessings of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala and forgiveness of our sins. Now Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, there was no question of any sin. And then again, he was engaged in nothing but dini activities, what we call dini activities. What else was he engaged in? There was wahi coming, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was imparting the knowledge of that wahi to the sahabas. Or there was jihad that was taking place. Or there was dawat that was being given. Or there was zikr that was being made. Or Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was teaching the deen to the companions. Or he was engaged in some nafil namaz, sometime tahajjud, sometime ishraq, sometime chash, sometime awwabin. That is something that he was doing all the time. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was all the time engaged in nothing but deen. But then yet he finds this time for what? It is for seclusion. No matter how great a person becomes, and no matter how much of work of deen he may be doing, he can be a great mufti, alim, he can be a great shaykh, great wali, great wuzru, but they too have to find some time for seclusion in which there is nobody between them and Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Therefore Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, with regards to his going to the cave of Hira before the nubuwat was made known to him, it states, حُبِّبَ إِلَيَّ الْخَلَىٰ, that this seclusion was made beloved to me, that to go away into the cave of Hira and stay in seclusion. So we will say that in seclusion you have to be alone, there must be nobody with you, then only you can be in seclusion. Now that is our misunderstanding, that you can be with everybody and yet you are not with anybody. A person can be with everybody and yet he is with nobody. If he has got his receivers right, he's got his transmitters right, he's got his heart purified, and he's got his connection with Allah Ta'ala right, then if he's sitting and talking to people and laughing and joking also, his heart is with Allah Ta'ala. And if he's engaged in ibadat also, he's with Allah Ta'ala. So in i'tikaf, sometimes you'll have 20 people, 30 people, like here we've got about 50 people, whatever it may be. And some places there may be more. And some places there used to be 500-600 people making i'tikaf. So now if each person is going to look for his own cubicle, then I must have a private ward. So that masjid will get filled up with nothing but screens. So the person is going to be with everybody. When we used to make i'tikafs in the 60s with Hazrat Sheikh Zakariya Sahab Rahmatullah Alayh, then because of the masjid, of course, wasn't so big, and the space was limited, and the crowd was big. So the space that each one was allocated was just about that, where you can barely turn right or left. That's all, no screens at all in the whole masjid, just that much of space. You just put your small sheet there, or blanket there, and sleep on that. There's no such thing as spacious rooms or big mattresses. And yet people used to spend the time. And there was a difference that they used to feel in their lives. because half the time of, or most of the time they were engaged in ibadah. There was no talking to the others. So it didn't mean, it didn't make any difference. That seclusion was still there. You with everybody, but you still secluded. Dunya ke mashghalon mein bhi wo ba khuda rahe. Dunya ke mashghalon mein bhi wo ba khuda rahe. Wo sab ke saath rehke bhi sab se juda rahe. In all worldly activities also they remain ba khuda. They remained with Allah Ta'ala. Together with everyone, yet they were with, on their own. That means their hearts were with Allah Ta'ala. Now when they smiled and spoke to somebody, then that was because Allah Ta'ala would become pleased with it. When they conducted the business, because Allah Ta'ala will be pleased, that is earning halal. Bringing up the children, marrying, whatever they were doing. Now everything was because of Allah Ta'ala's hukam. So their hearts were with Allah Ta'ala. All the time their hearts were with Allah Ta'ala. So they are occupied in worldly things, because it is not a world, or Shariat is not such that we have to leave everything and go away onto the mountain tops, or go and dig up one grave in one graveyard and then every night go and sleep there for as a reminder of death. So the person says, well, we always hear reminder of death, so let me go and dig up one grave there in the graveyard and then go and sleep there every night. And he forsakes his family and children. He says, because I want to remind myself of that. Now that is not Shariat. Shariat is that you do everything according to Allah Ta'ala's hukam. That's all. And Allah Ta'ala is the one who has given us the deen. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam demonstrated it. So everything that a normal person does, this person will do. But he will stay away from sins, from displeasing Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. I thought we will discuss something more from this i'tikaf thing. So this i'tikaf is a sign of the ishq of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. Therefore there are so many masail. Just as we have masail for other things, we have masail for i'tikaf also. So the second thing was what I said was sunnat i'tikaf. Yes, let's complete that. Was sunnat i'tikaf. So sunnat is what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam demonstrated in his life. Then one is muakkada, one is ghair muakkada. That which he did with regularity and he only left out due to some very valid reason, we'll say is muakkada. But that which he left out even without any valid reason, we say ghair muakkada. Then we have the nafil i'tikaf. Now for nafil i'tikaf is very simple and easy. Every time that you enter the masjid, you just make niyat, ya Allah, I'm making i'tikaf. Then whether you sit for 5 minutes or 1 hour or 10 hours, then you are in nafil i'tikaf. In nafil i'tikaf you can go outside again and you can come back inside. But in the sunnat i'tikaf, which is sunnat muakkada i'tikaf, then the person is not allowed to step outside the masjid area. Whether it is for janaza salat, or whether it is to go and visit some sick person, or whether it is to talk to somebody that is outside, whatever it may be, the person is not allowed to go outside the masjid area for that. Necessary talk he can engage in the masjid. Necessary talk. And sometimes we misunderstand what is necessary. Like to ask somebody, how are you feeling? Yesterday you had a headache, is it okay now? How's the family? Or something like that. It's all permissible. So much so that Sharia doesn't stifle a person, even in sunnat i'tikaf. If there's a businessman and he didn't sit to do business in i'tikaf, that means he didn't sit in i'tikaf to do business, because sometimes a person goes to dini programs, dini ijtimas and dini gatherings, or even goes for Hajj and Umrah, but his niyat is business. By the way is a different thing. That the person went for Hajj, he went for Umrah, and by the way he did some business, it's permissible, it's halal. But to go specially for business, so then it's permissible, it's still permissible. To do business and trade with Makkah Sharif or Madinah Sharif is permissible. But then the person must not say and don't announce all over, where are you going? I'm going for Umrah. Where are you going? I'm going for Hajj. Then he must say straight, I'm going for business. And by the way, I'm getting the opportunity, so I'll make an Umrah too. So now that is clear. So what I am saying is that in i'tikaf, if a person is a businessman, and now suddenly he has to say yes or no to a certain item, whether they must buy it or they mustn't buy it. The manager wants to know whether I must buy it or I mustn't buy it, whether I must place the order or not, or whether the color must be white or red or blue, or he wants to have some sort of confirmation whether this check was paid or wasn't paid, or there's somebody that is making a certain demand and claim. So what must I do now? In other words, those normal things that happen in a business. Now somebody just wants some sort of confirmation or yes or no, or some signing of a check or something like that, then that's permissible even in i'tikaf. The person could come inside the i'tikaf area and within a few minutes sort that matter out and go away. Now doesn't that sound like a dunyavi thing? It sounds as if it is something he's engaged in which is of dunya, and it is not normally permissible in a masjid. Normally that is not permissible. Under normal conditions, if somebody had to have some kind of a confirmation like that, or signing of a check, or doing some kind of a deal, then he must go outside the masjid, go into the sahan area or outside, and then go and do it there. But now this person who is in i'tikaf, sunnat i'tikaf, he doesn't have to break his i'tikaf to go outside. He can stay within the masjid and he can sort that out. Now look at how beautiful Shariat is. Doesn't make life difficult. That people who are in sunnat i'tikaf, they say, now what do I do now? I'm in the i'tikaf, now the person wants some kind of confirmation, I have to tell him to wait till after Eid. Now by that time things will go haywire. So that is permissible. So that we won't term as a dunyavi thing while she's in i'tikaf, because there's a need for it. So when we talk about, or when we say that we mustn't engage in worldly talk in the masjid, it means that worldly talk which is useless, futile, and is not necessary, then don't engage in such talk. But if there is something that is necessary, then he can engage in that, he can sort that out. In fact, it is even permissible while the person is in i'tikaf to have a haircut also. But now that doesn't mean that each one calls his barber that you bring all your machines here, because Eid is coming, so we all want to have a haircut now in the masjid. But the masla is that it's permissible. Now if somebody didn't have a haircut and he just had to have a proper arrangement made that no hair falls on the carpet and all that, and takes a haircut, and it's permissible. But of course we don't recommend that, and we don't say that now make a big announcement in all the i'tikaf areas that all those who didn't have a haircut, we got some baba that will go around giving a haircut. But the only condition is that the person must not do the payments and things like that in the masjid. So there are many masail that are pertaining to this i'tikaf, sunnat i'tikaf. But the most important thing is this, that we should remember that we are in i'tikaf. So when you step out of the masjid, it must be only for necessities, going to make wuzu or going to the toilet. And as I explained yesterday also, that when you are going to the toilet, on the way, whilst walking, you can talk to somebody who wants to find out something. But you cannot stop just because you saw a friend or saw somebody, then you stop now and tell that person that, look, when you're going home, make a telephone call to somebody or do this or do that. Now you stop. Once you stop for a little while also without real necessity, then that i'tikaf becomes fasid, it breaks. And this is one area which unfortunately in most places the people are negligent. Because our mizaj is that once we're walking, we want to talk to half a dozen people. So if anybody wants to talk, you say, well, look, I am in i'tikaf and I'm on my way to the wuzu khana, you can walk with me. And whilst you are talking, you keep moving. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, he used to make iyadat, he used to query about the health and welfare of person. But it is mentioned that whilst he was still walking, he never used to stop. So if a person is on his way and he's just talks to somebody, it's permissible. Or after that, whilst you're waiting at the wuzu khana for a place to make wuzu, if you talk, or at the toilet if the person has to queue up, then it is different. But if not, then be very, very careful that you don't engage in any kind of discussion standing outside the masjid with any person, or tell that person come inside the masjid if it is something that's necessary that has to be sorted out. So these are some of the basic rules of sunnat i'tikaf, wajib i'tikaf, and nafil i'tikaf. The other night when somebody was giving almonds here after the Taraweeh Salat, so I mentioned this to the brothers that were sitting around and eating the almonds. Now to us, we're just eating one or two almonds. One or two almonds the person is eating, so we'll think what is wrong with that. But that is eating, whatever it is, but it is eating in the masjid. The same with drinking water. Now many of us, we drink water in the masjid, Taraweeh time or other times. So whether it is eating or drinking, it is not the quantity, that only if you drink a jug full then you must make niyat of i'tikaf. Or if you eat 1 kilo other almonds then you must make i'tikaf, whether you eat one or two. But the thing is that the person is eating in the masjid, or he is drinking, or he is sleeping. So he must make the niyat of nafil i'tikaf. So when the person has come in with the niyat of nafil i'tikaf, or he makes it at that time, so now it will become permissible for him to eat that little which he has to eat. But those who are in sunnat i'tikaf, then for them it is permissible. In fact, they're eating, they're drinking, they're sleeping, that everything becomes ibadat, and they get the sawab of all the other ibadat that's taking place on the outside. People who are engaged in all the other ibadat outside, attending janazah namaz, visiting the sick and all the other things, then this person is sitting in i'tikaf and is getting all that sawab. And together with that, if he observes the etiquette of an adab of the sunnat i'tikaf, then he's getting the sawab of 2 hajj and 2 umrahs. What a great ibadat it is. So those who consider it as an insignificant ibadat, they must get their heads examined. It's a great ibadat. But condition that we must obey the rules, or we must follow the rules, stay away from any kind of sin, especially in the masjid and in Ramadan, in the i'tikaf. The person must be more on guard. So if you do that, then inshallah 10 days time when you come out, then you have a different heart. The heart undergoes a transplant. May Allah Ta'ala bless me, bless you, and the entire ummah with it. And after we finish with this i'tikaf thing, then inshallah we'll discuss some other hadiths or Quranic verses, whatever Allah Ta'ala puts to mind. I make dua that Allah Ta'ala accept your i'tikaf, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala reward you all for the sacrifice that you have made, and Allah Ta'ala must light up the fire of His love in my heart, in your hearts, to such an extent, and the love of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that we look forward to doing that which is pleasing to them. It's only love that will make a person do that which is pleasing to Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. It must not be like a burden. The person is dragged to make namaz. Now when it's namaz time, the person says, "Ah, I have to go now for namaz, because it is farz now, I have to make it, otherwise azab of Allah Ta'ala." It must not be like that. The person must think he's now going to meet his beloved, and his Allah is becoming happy now. And what an opportunity Allah Ta'ala gave it for communication. Now when he's going to make it like that, then there'll be a different feeling, a different enjoyment. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم ربنا تقبل منا إنك أنت السميع العليم وتب علينا إنك أنت التواب الرحيم اللهم إنا نسألك من خير ما سألك منه نبيك وحبيبك سيدنا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم ونعوذ بك من شر ما استعاذ منه نبيك وحبيبك سيدنا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وأنت المستعان وعليك البلاغ ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله وصلى الله تعالى على خير خلقه ونور عرشه سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمد وآله وأصحابه أجمعين برحمتك يا رب.